loves to come to be. And people gather around. They are all they can bring. Now.
Hi, this is Sterling Ogden again, sitting in for Sue Hildebrand. And I wanted to tell you that tonight's show is underwritten by, made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members in the printed image, specializing in custom screen printing and embroidery since 1980. The printed image offers American apparel and organic cotton options and can be reached at 898-9525. Tonight we have a controversial issue, as you would hope to have on community radio. And so I better read this. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. Tonight we have our guest is Georgianne Chapin. She has been a leader in the New York State healthcare reform movement for 20 years. She is president and CEO of Hudson Health Plan and founder of Hudson Center for Health Equality and Quality, Equity and Quality, whose mission is to promote humane, high-quality, cost-effective health care. She has a Master's of Arts and a Master's of Philosophy degrees in Socio-Medical Sciences from Columbia University. She has a law degree with honors from Pace University School of Law and has taught at Pace as an adjunct professor of law. She started her higher education with a bachelor's degree in anthropology, and I have to admit, my favorite guests are people who have studied anthropology. Today, we speak with Georgianne in her capacity as the founding executor of Intact America. Welcome, Georgianne Chapin.
Thank you so much, Sterling. It's a pleasure to be on your program.
Tonight, we want you to tell us about how, as an Intactivist, you are changing the way Americans think about circumcision. First, I want to talk about some of the reasons I chose this subject for tonight's program. Whenever I listen to a mother that has witnessed her child get a circumcision, they describe it in the language of trauma. Those descriptions have left me feel traumatized. The helpless baby strapped to a board, screaming, arching in pain. So that image has brought me to feel that circumcision is not a fair thing. So tell me, as an Intactivist, tell me about your work as an Intactivist.
Intactivists are people, it was sort of a made-up word, and it's really caught on. We believe that all people are entitled to intact bodies, intact genitals, the bodies they were born with. So we were activists for intactness, and somebody said, hey, intactivist, and it sort of stuck as... I think it's interesting that it's now, the word has moved into the American vernacular. You don't see it in quotes anymore. Essentially, as I said, we believe that children are born with the bodies they're born with for a reason. In particular, we're talking about the American custom of cutting off the foreskin of newborn baby boys or boys a little bit older. As a result of years of mythologizing about this totally normal, healthy, functional body part, the poor foreskin has gotten a reputation of being both insignificant and incredibly threatening and evil. It's interesting how it can have both connotations. And we simply believe in human rights. We believe baby boys are entitled to the same protections as girls. It's illegal under the federal law and most states to tamper with the normal healthy genitalia of a girl child. And we believe boys are entitled to exactly the same protection.
Well, I have to tell you that I myself, when I have described this to people, I'm in the nursing field, when I have described it to other nurses, even though they have witnessed this, that when I talk about it, I get giggles, I get laughs, I get, dismissiveness. They don't take me serious when I say that, I feel that this wasn't fair to happen to me. And so could you... kind of address that issue?
Sure.
Oh, I know what I wanted to say. I skipped it. When I realized, when I read on your website or a link that it said 15 square inches as an adult, and I've often thought since I heard that, I mean, how would my life be different with that extra 15 inches of highly innervated skin?
Right. Yeah, it's so interesting. You know, people say, oh, it's just a little tiny, it's a skin flap. It's just a little tiny bit of skin. Well, you know, the heart of a baby or the eye of a baby is pretty small, too, but you wouldn't gouge it out because it's small. Baby's tongue is tiny, but it's functional organ. And, as far as people's giggling and dismissiveness, essentially when something, people laugh when they're uncomfortable. And I think that when the topic of circumcision is brought up, even if someone hasn't done too much thinking about it, there's some fundamental instinctual level at which we know that this is bad, this is wrong, this is traumatic, this is bloody, this is not okay. So people are either defensive, dismissive, or try to ridicule it. Gandhi was... You know, a quote of Gandhi's, I'll paraphrase it, that often used is, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. And in most social movements, you see that trajectory. So, you know, whether it's abolition or same-sex marriage, you know, first everybody just ignored or dismissed the proponents of these human rights causes, and then they were ridiculed. So, you know, people ridicule intactivists. Some people will ridicule them and say, oh, you know, what are you obsessed with penises? Oh, Kent, don't you have something better to do with your time? As though protecting newborn babies from painful, unnecessary surgery were not a worthy thing to do with your time. Then now we're seeing a lot of fighting. You know, we see the certain religious groups and indeed... elements of the physician community fighting to justify what they've been doing to boys for all these years. But we know the next stage is that we're going to win, and we think that circumcision will be looked back on as that horrible thing that Americans used to do to babies. Because I will say, Sterling, for your audience who might not be aware of this, the United States is the only country in the world that considers routine circumcision of boys to be a legitimate medical procedure. Other countries, particular Islamic countries or Israel, Jewish country, consider circumcision a religious practice. But as a medical practice, the United States stands almost alone. We've also trained during the Korean War. We trained the South Koreans to do it, and we're trying to sell this intervention to other countries. But in general, Canada did it more. It's falling out of favor there. Australia, same thing. The English-speaking Commonwealth countries in the U.S. started circumcising babies, part of medical practice in the 1900s, and I'm sorry, late 1800s, and the U.S. is really the only one left that routinely does it and defends it.
Well, it is a thing that, it is an issue whose time has come. I know that I was reading some statistics, and I was kind of shocked to realize that when I was born in the mid-50s, over 90% of male babies were circumcised. And right now, it's less than 40, so...
It's probably more than 40 and less than 60.
All right.
The newborn circumcision rate in hospitals, it's not a well-reported statistic, and there's absolutely no reporting on circumcisions done outside the hospital, and even the report on circumcisions done inside the hospital, there are defects in that data, but I feel comfortable saying it's probably around half. That said... it varies immensely by geographic area, so you might want to think about that, because what could be, you know, why could it be necessary to circumcise 87% of boys born in West Virginia, but only 21% of boys born in California. I mean, I don't think their bodies are any different.
No.
It's simply what the medical profession is selling to or forcing on parents of newborns.
Well,
so, yes, but you're right that most men of our generation, I'm very close to you in age, I was born in 1951, there are very few intact men among our peers.
Well, you might have brought up, I'm sure if I quite, well, you brought up the Jewish men are, I've understood until I started doing a little research, are universally circumcised. But no, that's not true anymore.
That's correct. A lot of Jews have left the practice, and even among Jews who are circumcised or who circumcise their children, most, it appears, simply have them circumcised in a hospital by a doctor, which has absolutely no religious validity. So it's not a religious ritual. It's more like, this is how we expect our boys to look, so we're going to have them circumcised. I've had couple of my biggest discussions with Jewish friends of mine about who've been not very endorsing of the work I'm doing, turns out have their son circumcised in hospitals. So they have this idea that it's somehow a healthy, normal thing to do, but no religious conviction about it at all.
Well, there was I thought it was interesting that there are 125 rabbis in the United States, 16 here in Northern California that will do a Brit Shalom in place of a Brit Milah, and the naming ceremony in which you aren't circumcised. So there is a movement among them, and I was also surprised to see just how many books there have been written about this, how many organizations there are. There's a Doctors Opposing Circumcision. There are Men Do Complain. There is the shalomnotlong.org. It talks about where the rabbis will do it. And you are on the board of directors of the Attorneys for the Rights of the Child.
Right.
And there are bills in Congress, I guess, if that was my understanding, the male genital mutilation bill. And I'm not sure, is that still in Congress? Do you?
It's not before Congress now. That was that's a bill that is modeled on the anti-female genital cutting bill. Yes, there are many organizations, including, of course, Intact America, which is probably the largest, certainly the largest intactivist organization in the world. We're celebrating our completing our fifth year now, and we are on the web as intactamerica.org, a not-for-profit organization, and we also have about 27,000 followers on our Facebook page. So I would encourage your listeners to look at us on Facebook, and we'll also find dozens and dozens and dozens of other pages on Facebook that are advocating for the rights of boys to keep the bodies that they are born with. It's a movement whose time has come, for sure. And it's really very exciting to see the changes and to see the awareness, the growing awareness on the part of parents that this is kind of a no-brainer. Like, why would you cut your baby's perfect body?
And it doesn't come without risks.
Correct.
I had a little trouble, but it looks like babies die from this procedure.
And, yes.
And their parts that you don't want removed get removed. And in fact, total amputation can happen.
Yes.
And so this isn't necessarily a safe procedure. I haven't looked at the statistics, but they seem to be quite high in the number for the number of babies that die. I'm just amazed.
It's interesting because social media is so prominent now, and there are terrible statistics on circumcision-related injuries and deaths, because if a baby dies from bleeding to death after circumcision, it's recorded as exsanguination or bleeding to death. It's not recorded as death from circumcision. If a baby dies from an anesthesia problem, a slightly older baby who gets anesthesia and dies from that during circumcision, it's recorded as an anesthesia death. If you spend a lot of time, as some of us do, on social media, and people share things very widely, not a week goes by that we don't see somebody saying, oh, my poor little man, we thought we were going to lose him after his circumcision. He just wouldn't stop bleeding. Thank goodness everything's okay now and we can bring him home from the hospital tomorrow. Or there was actually a baby in Northern California, right near you, who died a couple of years ago, and the whole thing was documented on Facebook. He was normal. He had a circumcision, and he bled to death and died of a heart attack. And that was all documented on Facebook. And unfortunately, for the terrible, you know, the terrible tragedy for the parents who allowed this unnecessary surgery, certainly not thinking that their baby was going to die from it. Unfortunately, some people tend to pile on and talk about what bad parents these are, and then there's a lot of defensiveness, and the pages get pulled from Facebook. But if your listeners are vigilant, there's no dearth of reports of terrible complications and near-death experiences from infant circumcision.
Well, I find your website full of a lot of links and a lot of good information. One was they talked about the foreskin is more of the prepuce would be more of a technical term and is both mm-hmm. a male and female. And that brings me to another thing. I mean, I understand that female circumcision is illegal in this country. So this is kind of a gender difference here.
Yes. There's actually a very interesting history of female circumcision. And for one thing, people get all hung up on female genital cutting is mutilation and male genital cutting is not. And that's simply an absurd statement. The act of tying down a child and forcibly cutting off part of his or her body, it's the same in terms of ethics. Both are completely unethical and not a medical procedure. They're actually sexual assault on a child. But another misconception is that female genital cutting, which takes place largely in African and Middle Eastern countries, is universally more destructive than male circumcision. In fact, there are all kinds of degrees of female genital cutting, from simply drawing a bit of blood from the labia or the clitoris down to removing those body parts. And to get into a discussion about which is worse and how much is removed, it's really beside the point, which is that any kind of genital cutting is unethical. This country, the United States, has a history of genital cutting of girls, and in fact, some of the Blue Cross insurance plans paid for clitoridectomy, in other words, removing the clitoris from girls, well into the 1970s. Mm. There's a woman named Patricia Robinette who's written a book about her life, and she's our age. She's in her early 60s, and she had her clitoris removed when she was 5 or 6, presumably as a cure for the sin of masturbation. That's how circumcision started in Victorian England and America, as a way of preventing masturbation. Circumcision of girls or genital cutting of girls sort of fell out of favor, and it's now considered, it's universally abhorred in the U.S. and considered to be a terrible, terrible, terrible thing to do to a girl. But somehow cutting the genitals of boys has survived as a legitimate pseudo-medical practice, and of course neither are legitimate.
Well, I work in the field of psychology. This is my volunteer job, and where I get my money is in the field of psychology. And there are, like, hierarchies of needs. There's different models, psychological growth and development models. Maslow is my favorite. And sexuality and having a fulfilling sexual life is one of them. And that's one of the things that horrified me about female mutilation. Genital mutilation, excuse me, is, you know, that the men were robbed of the chance to be able to satisfy their partner. And so I understand that there's some sexual changes. I've often wondered, what would I have done with that extra 15 square inches of skin? I'm not sure what my how my sex life would have been different. But I just kind of think it's unfair for me as an adult to have to wonder about that and not to be able to make the choice. And for sexuality is an intricate part of our being, and to attack sexuality, the trauma of that. I was reading one of the links that you had to a report. It was actually a report about reports about all who was it that was looking at all the different... Dan Bollinger, here it is. Okay. Normal versus cut. Final psychological score, 100 to 0. He could find no positive psychological benefit from the being a male circumcision.
Right.
But he talked a little bit about the trauma, and that's something that I deal with in my field is pre-verbal trauma. And how much more pre-verbal can you get than the day you're born or the few days after you're born? That this, and he cited studies associated with sexual trauma as higher suicide rates. When they did a study of over 900 people, they said 800 of those individuals reported negative effects. That I mean, it's obvious that this is perceived as an assault by a child. And here's one that I thought was extremely interesting, was a study that showed with early trauma, sexual trauma, a lack of being able to express your feelings. And how many times did I hear that when I was growing up, that women complained that men couldn't express their feelings?
Yeah, you've touched on so many things in what you just said. It's really kind of an overwhelming topic when you think of what the implications are of living in a society where babies are forcibly mutilated when they are, you know, only a couple of days out of the womb. And we spend so much time trying to justify it and saying that, well, they don't remember. But I think even in, of course, there's not necessarily a conscious memory, although I've met many men in the work that I do who have some type of conscious or some type of preverbal memory of their circumcision and, you know, some of these. And then I've met countless men who... later in their lives, either during therapy or sometimes during a subsequent medical procedure, have recalled their circumcision and kind of worked through that with a therapist. I've met other men who themselves mightily resisted the possibility that they were their night terrors when they were children and later had anything to do, any basis in anything that happened. You know, nothing ever happened to me. Why am I having night terrors? And many people have subsequently related the night terrors, sometimes accompanied by images of lights overhead, clover leaf kind of lights, operating room lights, people leaning over them, large people looming over them, people in white coats looming over them. There's no... If you want to look and you're open-minded, there's no shortage of proof that this is an extraordinarily traumatic and destructive thing to do to a child. If you don't want to know it, and some of us would rather not know it because it's just so painful to realize it, if you don't want to know it, you can deny it. I'll say one more thing and then we can go back, but... I think the other inequity here is that many Americans, many of us would have no problem accepting that a girl's trauma, a woman's trauma, could be related to a very early experience of sexual assault, which is what, of course, having part of your penis is, or your penis removed is, or having your clitoris removed or having your hymen forcibly broken, being raped either, you know, manually or some other way when you were a child, we would have no problem believing a girl who had lasting trauma from that. But we somehow dismiss men who say that they have, that they feel victimized from having been tied down and had the most sensitive part of their body cut off when they were little tiny babies.
Well, let me remind you that you're listening to KZFR Chico, The Real Issue. Tonight we have Georgianne Chapin from Intact America, and we're talking about what I would prefer to call male genital mutilation. I myself have, I feel trauma, just the thought of it. I can't tell you that I have trauma from it. I can't tell you that my life is different from it. But the idea of that somebody did this to me and did it under the guise of good medical care is outrages me. And
probably never even asked your mother, let alone you. Certainly didn't ask you, and probably never asked your mother either. Just basically chopped away.
My mother described it to me one day. I don't know. We were pretty close. We had a lot of conversations, and she described it happening to me. And she was horrified. She had tears in her eyes. The description of it traumatized me. It's every woman I know that has watched her baby be circumcised is horrified by it.
Right.
Well, I'm going to take a short break, and when we're back, I'm going to keep talking to you, Georgianne, but I'd like to open the phones to anybody who wants to weigh in on this subject. Pro or con, I'd sure like to hear from you. Our number is 530-895-1114. Again, that's 530-895-1114.
I'm Bill Moyers. This week on Moyers & Company, going home with Maya Angelou.
We lived with our grandmother and uncle in the rear of the store. These little white kids would come in and call her Annie. It was terrifying that this great, powerful woman, who was my protection, couldn't protect herself.
I hope you'll join us.
Join us for Moyers & Company, Monday evenings at 6 on 90.1 KZFR.
Georgianne, we're back. I haven't got a caller yet, but again, I encourage you to call at 895-1114. Some of the other things I saw, you have a list of myths why people shouldn't get circumcised. Myths why people should get circumcised. Circumcising babies is safe and a harmless procedure. I think we've covered that. Circumcision is just a little snip. And circumcision is routinely recommended and endorsed by doctors and other health professionals. Are there any studies that show that circumcising of infants is healthy?
No. Simply, no. There is some very, very tenuous information, data that suggests that the risk of a urinary tract infection is slightly less in a child who is circumcised than a child who is not circumcised. The problems with that is, one is that, of course, that doesn't, you don't cut off body parts to prevent infection. You could completely prevent, you know, toenail fungus if you just pulled out everybody's toenails when they were born. Urinary tract infections can be treated with antibiotics in boys just as they are in girls. They're more common in girls anyway. The other is that it's certain that a good number of infections that intact boys experience are related to terrible advice parents are given by doctors to the effect that they must pull back the child's foreskin, force it back in order to clean under it. It would be like peeling back fingernails to clean under them. The foreskin is attached to the penis with the same kind of synechial tissue that the fingernail is attached to the nail bed. And And that's for the protection of the child, for protection of the penis. It separates over a child's first 10, 12 years. Some boys have a natural separation by the time they're just a few months old. Others, it does not occur until adolescence or sometimes even later. If you think about it, the only reason you need to slide that foreskin back is for pleasure and sexual relations. So it makes sense that around the time of early puberty is when that foreskin fully detaches from the penis in many boys. So if you force the foreskin back on an infant, you create pain, bleeding, adhesions, and that can lead to infection, which then is blamed on the foreskin, but it's really the fault of the parent or the medical professional who messes with the foreskin. Mm. Imagine doing that to stretch your baby daughter's hymen with, you know, regularly, every time, you know, you change her diaper. I mean, you would be introducing all kinds of trauma and bacteria. And then to blame the infection on the hymen would be sort of ridiculous, right? Yet we do that with the foreskin.
Well, I noticed that there is a lot of educational material out there when you bring up circumcision and you start bringing up these issues, that there are... excuse me just a moment. In the studio by myself trying to control these phones. You got to excuse me. So anyhow, yes, we missed a caller. In fact, we have a caller on the line. I'm going to take them before I talk on too much. You're on. You're on the air. Yes, they are not on the air. That sounds like a fax. Well, we aren't going to get a fax on that number. Anyhow, back to where we were. So... The cleaning of the foreskin, that there's lots of information out there about how to do that. There's lots of information about how to take care of somebody who's having these sort of troubles. Excuse me. Anyhow.
Essentially, I think we made way too big. It's sort of like the directions on the shampoo, you know, bottle. Tells you how to get the shampoo out of the bottle, how to lather it, how to put it on your head, repeat it. Basically, we don't need instructions on how to just take care of our normal bodies. And most boys, as they get older, have no trouble keeping their penises clean because it feels really good. To pull their foreskin back and, you know, let it run under warm water. You don't need any special owner's manual or parent's manual. You simply dip your child into the bath and pull him out and dry him with a towel. You don't need to force any of his tissues back. You don't need to, any more than you would force up his tongue and brush underneath it. You simply wash what's seen and let the child go about his business. That's what the rest of the world does. That's what men have been doing throughout history, and they do just fine.
Again, I want to remind you, we're talking to George Ann Chapin of Intact America, and if you'd like to join the conversation, dial 530-895-1114.
Let me point out, Sterling, that on intactamerica.org, our resources does have a couple of fact sheets about care of the intact penis, so... pretty much demystifies the issue.
Very
good.
And
I highly recommend that document.
I think we finally got a caller. Are you there, caller?
Oh, hi. Yes, I am. I just wanted to mention that I had three boys. I'm 62 years old. And I questioned it the very first time why it had to be done. And they said it was for cleanliness because they would get infections from gunk building up in it underneath the tissue, and that it was very difficult to clean, and that they would get infections. So I had it. All three of my boys were circumcised, and I never questioned it after the first time, but it was pretty horrifying to experience that.
Yes, well, you were my friend you were lied to, or you were given terrible information. The stuff that builds up is smegma, and girls have it just like boys do. It actually doesn't much build up under the infant foreskin because it's attached to the head of the penis. It's certainly there at the opening of the foreskin, the urethra. Dipping a child in the bathwater will take care of it. Girls, as I say, women, we all have natural bodily secretions.
Well,
it's not
right.
dirty,
I'm
it's not carcinogenic.
I'm 62 years old
it's
now, and I'm a little wiser.
Yeah.
But my first baby, I was, 20, and I just trusted what the doctors said, and I figured, well, my husband had it, and almost everybody in the United States has it. So.
Right. Well, one thing that's a wonderful opportunity for you is to spread the word now about, how you learned it wasn't necessary. And maybe some of us, who weren't able to save our sons from it can save our grandchildren or save other people's babies. So, your story is so common. And
just they just did it, and that's all there was to it. And I said, why? And they said, oh, because you'll prevent infections.
How old is your oldest son?
Oh, my oldest is 34.
Right. That's exactly the age of my son. I was fortunate enough not to have been pressured into doing it, and I just said no, and everybody left me alone. So my son is intact, but I know exactly the era that you had your babies, and I'm not surprised.
Right. And it was just automatically done. I mean, they did ask me. Apparently that's unusual, but they did ask me.
They asked you, but it doesn't sound like you had much of an option to say
just
no,
just because
right?
I didn't know any better, I just went, oh, well, I guess if it prevents infection, then that's what I'll do.
Of course, our common sense is if the foreskin is so dirty,
yeah, why
so
were we
dangerous,
born that way?
Why does nature keep giving men foreskins, right?
Yes. And every other animal has them. And
yep.
I know.
That's right.
Oh, well, I'll let you go.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that information, though. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I don't know if that is common anymore, that it's automatic. Is it?
Well, it's not automatic in that they must ask for permission, but of course they aren't asking for the child's permission. They're asking for the mother's permission or the father's
permission.
Well,
of course.
It's not automatic, but in some states it's still very, very common practice. In California, in general, it's much less common, but I believe in the area
that's
of California
where, I'm from,
where this
California,
program is,
and
it's still pretty
much
common.
Automatic.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I'm going to ask that we go on to the next caller.
All righty. Thank you. Bye.
This brings me to another subject, is that doctors pressuring people into doing this. I mean, is that ethical?
No, it's absolutely unethical to sell an unnecessary medical procedure to somebody. It's doubly unethical because, first, it's unethical to sell an unnecessary medical procedure, to promote an unnecessary. The second thing, which, of course, is the most fundamental part of this issue, is the baby is not sick, does not need the surgery, and it's nobody's right to cut off a body part of somebody who is not sick and doesn't need it. Children in this country have individual rights, and that includes a right to an intact body, and it is completely unethical for another person to give permission, and for a doctor, based on the permission of another person, to cut off a normal body part.
Well, on another website, there was an implication that the American Association of Pediatrics would not come out against this because doctors could stand to lose money if they didn't perform this. And I noticed that in your mission statement, which I have somewhere in front of me, that you talk about where is it?
We say that it's unacceptable to cut off part of a child's body for religion, culture, or profit.
There you go. Exactly.
Right. And you can find that mission statement, your listeners, at intactamerica.org. Also, there are links from intactamerica.org to Intact America's Facebook page, to a blog on infant circumcision, and tons of resources. And I really think anyone who's interested in this topic would find it very enriching to join with other people. For example, on social media, this is a huge conversation. Many, many, many people are talking and discussing it, and it's quite lively and quite interesting. So please get involved. This is the human rights issue of the 21st century.
We do have another caller, and I was hoping the caller could give your first name.
Yes, hi. My name is Sarah.
Go ahead, Sarah.
Well, first, before I begin, I want to tell you guys, I also am opposed to circumcision of boys or girls. I worked in this community as a midwife for a while, and during that period of time, and the American Academy of Pediatrics actually did come out saying that it was medically unnecessary. Now, that isn't necessarily saying they're against it, but it's medically unnecessary as declared by them. And the other thing that I saw here in California is that Medi-Cal, people who use Medi-Cal as their insurance, will not pay for it because it's not considered a necessary medical procedure. So I found that very, uplifting at the time. And unless that's been reversed, I believe that is still the case. And I think that's good. And I was able to, when I would talk to people about their options and so on and so forth, sometimes it would come up, and sometimes they'd be interested in my opinion, and sometimes they weren't, of course. But for to be able to say, well, your Medi-Cal won't pay for it. Oh, really? Yes, you see, it's not medically necessary. So I was happy to be able to say that, and I hope that people are still able to say that, and I believe that they are. But
in
I support
California,
your campaign. I don't think it's a good idea.
Medi-Cal does not pay for circumcision. For routine, so-called routine circumcision, as you say, because it's medically unnecessary.
Right.
Unfortunately for baby boys and for the taxpayers, but primarily for baby boys, many other states' Medicaid programs do pay for circumcision under some twisted idea that you don't want to deprive low-income children of this wonderful advantage of having their penises reduced in size when they're little tiny babies. There are about 19 states that where Medicaid does not pay for circumcision, and the rest it does. And the physician lobby is very heavy on this. The American Academy of Pediatrics, which let's remind ourselves, is a trade association. Mm-hmm. It's there to protect the financial, to protect the pocketbooks of its members. And their latest statement on circumcision calls for reducing any financial barriers to circumcision by having state Medicaid programs, i.e. taxpayers, pay for it. That's a shameless thing for the American Academy of Pediatrics to call for, because they know it's not medically necessary.
Thank you, Sarah.
You're welcome.
We got a lot of other people want to get on the line, so if you want to get on, it's 895-1114. And Sarah brought up something about being a midwife, and there is something on the website of Intact America about breastfeeding. This could actually affect the ability of a baby to breastfeed.
Absolutely does. I mentioned Facebook and that being such a rich resource. There was a picture of somebody posted a couple days ago of trying to breastfeed her newly circumcised son, and how he couldn't latch on, and all he wanted to do, as she said, was sleep. The babies go into shock often after circumcision, and it interrupts breastfeeding, clearly interrupts breastfeeding. Should be completely unallowed for that reason alone.
Again, I want to remind our listeners, we're talking to Georgian Chapin of Intact America about male genital mutilation. Some of the social pressures are, I want to look like my father.
No. The boys don't say that. They're just little babies.
Uh-huh.
The fathers say, I want him to look like me. Right? Or the doctors say to the father, don't you want him to look like me? But none of the little baby boys are saying, please chop off part of my penis because I want to look like my dad.
Good point. We also there, I have in my notes that there was a global survey of circumcision harm. Or there is in the process being one of those?
Yes, that's a website. If you Google Global Survey of Circumcision Harm, I'm not sure. I believe it's still active, and those are self-reports by men who feel that they were harmed. Well, self-reports of men about being circumcised and expressing, you know, both their feelings and objective facts about bodies.
We got another call, Georgian. Here we go. What's your name?
Hello. I have a physician who would like to speak on the subject of circumcision on the line.
Well.
Hello?
Go ahead. What's your name?
Oh, Ken Logan.
Okay, Ken, why don't you go ahead and tell us what you feel about circumcision?
I'm not on the air, right?
Oh, you are on the air.
Oh, I am.
Yes.
I'm a family physician. And my two things that come to my mind. One is, first of all, if children or male adults are having problems with their foreskin, if the foreskin remains, the ideal world would be where your healthcare provider and you have a good relationship to discuss any irritation or problem, infection or anything. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, as a family physician, over the years, I didn't learn circumcision in training because I think it may have been discussed earlier, but I haven't been listening to the whole show, but Medi-Cal, I think this might have been discussed, Medi-Cal, at least the last I heard, does not pay for circumcision, so where I trained, I didn't learn circumcision. I had to learn it after I came into practice because I had patients the parents wanted it. And I definitely did not advise it, but I did it as the parents requested. And I want to tell you, as someone who did circumcisions, it is, it's hard for me to come up with a more horrible thing to do to somebody and this little baby. And I guess I could say we strap them down. We strap the child down, usually. A nurse is there at the head of the baby, and you have them strapped down. And you poke their penis with a numbing shot in a couple different places, and then you cut the foreskin off. You have to put a little gadget on there to make sure you get it straight and all that, but it's horrible. It's been a horrible thing to do as I practice medicine, again, not at my advice, but at the request of parents. And I just have not felt ever that it's an appropriate, it's an unneeded thing. I agree with the speaker. And it's unfortunate that it's kind of socially and even religiously, I think, over decades has been kind of the thing to do. And I totally agree with it's not the thing to do.
I hope you're not doing any more circumcisions, given that you say it's the most horrible thing you've done. And you know, there are family physicians who, I have a very close friend, who's actually on the board of Intact America, who was a family physician, and she said she decided to listen to her body and her instincts, and she would never circumcise another child again.
Yeah.
You, by circumcising it, recognizing it's horrible and circumcising, doctors do perpetuate this thing.
I know. I agree, and I regret that I did it. Doing what the parents asked me to do.
Would
a parent watch.
The question I would ask, you know, is if your parent came in and asked you to pull out your child's fingernails.
I totally agree. I do, it makes me shudder to think about what I did, to be honest with you.
How did you stop, Doctor? I'm so interested that when, how did you finally decide and say that you wouldn't do it anymore?
Well, I'd like to be able to be proud and say, I just stopped doing it and would tell the parents that they had to find some other doctor to do it. They'd have to get another doctor, you know, for their child. But in reality, a few years ago, I'm 61, and I have generally stopped seeing babies and children of that age. So in reality, I don't do it anymore because my practice just doesn't fit that anymore. I would love to say that I just said no and go somewhere else if you want it done. It's not a thing I wear with pride in what I've done as a doctor.
Well,
in my
by
life.
Making this phone call, you're doing a huge service to any parent
Good.
Or other physician who would hear it. And you know, you could. I mean, I'm not telling you what to do with your time, but there are opportunities to get involved and share your story. And intactamerica.org is Intact America's website. Our Facebook page is just Intact America on Facebook.
Intact America.
And there are so many opportunities now to speak out against this terrible medical practice.
And be a voice as a physician. That
yes.
sounds good.
Yeah.
I will tell you just...
Get in touch with me if you like. I'd be delighted to talk to you more and talk to you about how we might be able to... to work with you to spread the word. I really appreciate your call.
Sure. And let me just throw out a little tidbit. I have my children are two boys, and I did not have them circumcised. So I am circumcised. So I'm proud of that, but that's about it. That's about it of my pride.
Well, get in touch with us if you have time. We'd love to talk to you. And thank you for your call. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for thank you so much for speaking as you are.
Ken, I have to thank you for calling.
Sure.
Ken, you are, I consider you a pillar of the community. You're one of the few physicians I know that actually does volunteer work. I sure appreciate your call. Thank you.
Sure, thank you.
And we do have time for another caller, but before we go on to that, I did want to touch on the fact that you, Intact America, also talks about other types of coerced operations. One of the ones that I've always heard that provides a lot of psychological trauma is people who are intersex. We used to call it hermaphrodite, just like we used to call intact people uncircumcised. I'm certainly glad and appreciate the new terms. But the idea of deciding when somebody is born with a little bit of both sex genitals for the parents to decide what gets to cut off right at the age of their birth is something that I think is abhorrent. And people should be able to make these decisions about their genital integrity as adults. So I'm very glad that you're touching on that. And before you address that, Georgianne, we got another caller. I'm going to go to them.
Right.
Caller, give your name and you're on the air. Are you there?
Are you talking to me?
I am talking to you. Yeah.
Okay. I'm turning off my radio. I am the mother of an almost 50-year-old. I guess he's a man now. In my heart, he's always a boy. Anyway, when he was born in the hospital, I just want to share my story, too, because it was so taken for granted. I remember he was born in California, and I remember the doctor or a nurse came and just said, sign here for your boy's circumcision. And it didn't even occur to me to talk to his dad about it first. I just signed it because that was what was done. I was 23. It seems like I would have been old enough to question, but I just took it for granted. And I was not there. I was not present. And it was very much like, oh, yeah, this is just what we do. And then it was done. And I don't know that he... I don't know in what ways it affected him, you know, but I do shudder that I allowed that to happen to my little baby. and that if I was going to allow it to happen, that I should have been right there with him to feel that pain with him.
Well, of course, one of the reasons that circumcision persists, what's your first name?
I'd rather not say.
Okay. All right, my friend. One of the reasons circumcision persists is that they don't want you to see it. It's been, there was an article recently that, or not even that recently, it's a few years old, that showed that if parents watched a video of a circumcision, they were far less likely to agree to having their child circumcised. And, of course, you don't even know whether they would have let you be in that room. It was, circumcision is a behind-closed-door kind of procedure, and that is, again, how it perpetuates itself. One thing you might be interested in knowing is that pretty much the founder of the Intactivist movement, a woman named Marilyn Milos, who lives in Marin County, she founded the National Organization of Circumcision Information Resource Centers. She was she trained as a nurse after she had had her three sons, and was assisting at a circumcision for the first time, and was shocked at what she saw going on to the baby. And then the doctor looked at her and said, "You know, there's nothing. This isn't medically necessary." And she was flooded with a wave of sickness because she realized that she had allowed her three boys to be circumcised. She had no idea what they would be going through. So there are so many mothers, you know, in your position who, you know, are now telling the same story. So again, I just thank you so much for your call. And this should be learning for young mothers who might find themselves in this situation.
Right. And it did not, you know, it makes me sick and sad. And and another part of my personal story is that my I attended my grandson's bris 18 years ago, and I was the one who, and I just, tears were streaming down my face. It was not something that I had the power to stop, and I just, my whole focus was to be as much with him as I could, and it was dreadful. I don't know how they do it differently between a bris and
it's
the surgical.
It's the same thing. It's mutilation. Yeah.
Well,
you know,
it doesn't seem like there was any anesthesia.
I'm going to have to jump in here, folks. I'm going to have to let you know.
Most hospitals do not use anesthesia, by the way. Most hospitals do not anesthetize babies.
Okay. I have to jump in here, but before you hang up, I wanted to tell you that I read on a website, I believe it's Saving Our Sons. They have resources for women who have misgivings about this procedure, and they also have a package that you can send to expectant mothers of baby boys that will give them education on circumcision and breastfeeding and other things.
Wow.
So there are a lot of resources out there. In fact, there's doctors opposing circumcisions. Men do complain. There is the JewishCircumcision.org, Jewish Resource Center. There is shalom.notlong.org that performs the naming ceremony without doing a circumcision. They call it Brit Shalom. And so there's lots of organizations out there. But we are way out of time.
Okay.
So, Georgiana, why don't you give us your website? And I want to thank you for being on.
Thank you.
Thank you again. www.intactamerica.org. Also, Intact America on Facebook. All the materials on our website are free. Sign up, get our newsletter. We're so appreciative of all the calls that have come in today, and to you, Sterling, for